It is 5 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. U.S. lawmakers approve a measure to scrutinize any final Iran nuclear agreement. A U.S. Senate panel Tuesday unanimously approved a compromise measure that will subject any final nuclear agreement between six world powers and Iran for congressional review and approval. The measure moves to the full Senate and then the House of Representatives for a vote. White House spokesman Josh Earnest says President Obama will likely sign it now that some objectionable language has been removed.
If we could clarify Congress's role by taking all of these steps, shortening the review period, being clear about what it is that they're voting on, making clear that this is a vote to vote later on congressional sanctions, that would actually achieve, at least in part, what the president has established as the priority here, which is to ensure that our negotiators have the time and space that's necessary to reach an agreement if one can be reached by the end of June.
The measure cuts the congressional review period from 60 to 30 days. The president would have to certify Iran's living up to the agreement every 90 days. Sanctions put in place by Congress would immediately be reimposed if Tehran would violate them. As many as 400 migrants died trying to reach Europe from Libya when their boat capsized. The boat was believed to have held more than 500 people when it left North Africa Sunday. The Italian Coast Guard rescued dozens on Monday. Good weather has produced a flood of migrants into the tens of thousands from Africa, the Middle East, trying to escape conflict and repression. Somali al-Shabaab militants Tuesday attacked the country's education ministry, leaving at least 15 dead, several wounded. After detonating a car bomb, gunmen forced their way into the building in the capital of Mogadishu. Security forces eventually retook the building, killing seven of the attackers. This is VOA News. President Obama pledged more than $200 million in new humanitarian aid to Iraq on Tuesday. He lauded visiting Iraqi Prime Minister Haider al-Abadi's effort to reconcile Iraq's ethnic and religious factions.
In a significant change from some past practices, I think both Sunni leaders and Kurdish leaders feel that they are heard in the halls of power, that they are participating in governance in Baghdad. And although there is the natural back and forth that exists in any democracy, Prime Minister Abadi has kept true to his commitments to reach out to them and to respond to their concerns.
Asked about the additional weapons sought by Iraq, Mr. Obama said only that U.S. and Iraqi military coordination is improving to make sure Baghdad's forces are successful. The World Tuesday marked the first anniversary of the abduction of more than 200 Nigerian schoolgirls by the Islamist militant group Boko Haram, with pledges of solidarity, marches, and silent vigils. Jibril Ibrahim, director of the Center for Democracy and Development, took part in a candlelight vigil.
It's a sign that our hope is still there, that our belief is still there, that these 219 girls would be found and would be returned to their families, that we as a nation cannot abdicate our responsibility to these young Nigerians. The search and rescue of these girls is an absolute imperative.
Nigeria's president-elect Muhammadu Buhari vowed Tuesday to make every effort of his new administration to free the schoolgirls taken from the Borno State village of Chibok in April 2014. Former Central African Republic presidents François Bozizé and Michel Djordjia signed an agreement Tuesday in Nairobi committing themselves to a reconciliation process. It follows the signing early this month of a separate agreement between the so-called anti-Balaka militia and the Muslim Salika Rebel Alliance to end sectarian violence that followed a 2013 coup. Meanwhile, the head of the UN mission to CAR called on donors to contribute more funds for the country's upcoming elections and humanitarian aid. President Obama Tuesday said he intends to take communist Cuba off the U.S. list of state sponsors of terrorism as he seeks to normalize relations with the island nation after five decades of hostilities. His decision follows a review that concluded Cuba has not provided any support for international terrorism over the past 6 months. SpaceX's rocket with an unmanned Dragon cargo ship blasted off for the International Space Station Tuesday, carrying food, science experiments, and equipment. SpaceX, one of two companies hired by NASA to fly cargo to the space station following the retirement of the space shuttle. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bate, Washington. Today is Wednesday, April 15th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. It's been a year since Boko Haram abducted 276 schoolgirls in northern Nigeria.
When you don't see your child for 2 hours, you're not sure where they are, you panic. 365 days, it's killing. You can't sleep, you can't eat, you can never be yourself.
Rosalind Ala is one of the mothers of the abducted Chibok girls. Guinea's opposition suspends protests after 2 days of violent clashes with security forces. Sierra Leone authorities say Tuesday's back to school was a success. And the United Nations says Kenya's plan to forcibly repatriate refugees back to Somalia is a violation of international law.
UNHCR is nevertheless concerned that abruptly closing the Dadaab refugee camps and forcing them back to Somalia would have extreme humanitarian and practical consequences, and it would be in breach of Kenya's international obligations.
Karen DeGroote is a spokesperson for the UNHCR. Human Rights Watch said there's widespread lawlessness and banditry in northern Mali, and an ambulance driver will describe the scene after Tuesday's Al-Shabaab attack in Somalia's capital, Mogadishu. Those stories plus Mark Omar's sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. It's been 1 year since Boko Haram militants kidnapped more than 200 schoolgirls from the village of Chibok in northeast Nigeria. As Chris Stein reports, protesters took to the streets of the capital Abuja to mark the anniversary.
365 days ago, militants from the Islamic extremist group Boko Haram swept into the government girls' school in the Borno state town of Chibok and made off with more than 200 schoolgirls in a mass kidnapping that sparked international outrage. Since then, the group managed to overrun most of Borno State, only to be pushed back in a multinational military offensive. The Nigerian military has recaptured town after town from the insurgents in the past months, but have yet to find any of the girls. The Bring Back Our Girls protest group has been rallying every day since the kidnapping at the Unity Fountain in Abuja. On the one-year anniversary, they staged a march from the fountain to the Ministry of Education to air their grievances about why the girls have not been rescued. Those in the march were schoolgirls themselves, meant to represent the kidnapped girls. Miriam Yakubu Akunye helped organize the rally. Her 8-year-old niece is also one of the marchers.
It is very sad. Sometimes when you think about this, it's like you have an out-of-body experience. We alive, children are alive, went to school, and this happened to them. They disappeared, and now it's 360 days.
Rosalind Ala's 5-year-old daughter has been counting the days since the girls are missing and was one of the marchers. For her, the Chibok kidnapping feels personal.
When you don't see your child for 2 hours, you're not sure where they are, you panic. 365 days, it's killing. You can't sleep, you can't eat. You can never be yourself.
I can't help feeling that it could have been me. Many other girls like me across the country are equally outraged and heartbroken.
Accompanied by the police, the marchers headed into the courtyard of the education ministry and read letters outlining their concerns to officials representing the minister, who was not there. Most of their letters wanted to know the same thing. Why has the government not brought the schoolgirls back yet? There was no such public memorial in the town of Chibok, says Ayuba Alamson, an elder in the town. Many people preferred to stay inside, deterred by the larger military presence in Chibok, which was captured briefly by Boko Haram last November. Many families still hold out hope of seeing their daughters again, he says.
They have been praying day and night that one day they will see this girl.
Not all the girls have parents to come home to, Alamson says. In the intervening year, some of the parents of the Chibok girls have died from hypertension, which he attributed to the stress caused by the kidnappings. Others have been killed by the same people who kidnapped their daughters, Boko Haram. Chris Stein for VOA News, Abuja.
Guinea's opposition has suspended protest until next Monday after 2 consecutive days of violent clashes with security forces. Opposition parties called the demonstrations to try pressure the government to hold local elections ahead of presidential vote scheduled for October 11 this year. The announcement to suspend protests comes after Prime Minister Mohamed Fofana reportedly said on Tuesday he has set up a committee to explore means for a dialogue with the opposition. Ousmane Diallo is a member of the executive committee of the Opposition Union of Democratic Forces Party. He says the suspension is necessary to give members time to reflect.
We decided to suspend our protest until next Monday because we need to allow activists to reorganize and political party to deal with victim causes by security forces. That situation we are again faced with the brutality and the police and gendarme in our country.
I did speak with a government minister who said that the demonstration you had was illegal, that you did not get permission to demonstrate.
The demonstration is not illegal because the legality, the law said we need to inform the local authority. But actually, we haven't legal authority in our commune. We decided to not recognize his power.
According to one account, Prime Minister Fofana has said that he's going to make new proposals to the opposition to resume dialogue. Is that why you postponed the protest?
Yeah, we have 3 July in 2030. We have a discussion, we have a dialogue with this government, but he does not respect his engagement. That's the whole problem. Right now, we need the action. We don't need the dialogue, too. We need the action. We need to our city, the Commission of Election, stop his program. That's our condition to return on the table for negotiation.
One of your demands is that you want the Elections Commission to cancel the current election timetable. Why?
Because he's the member of the Commission of Election is corrupted. He is not work with the legal situation. And our government don't need to organize the objective election.
The government official we spoke with the other day said that it's not right for you, the opposition, to say that the Electoral Commission is not legal because the Electoral Commission was elected by both the opposition and the government.
So the commission is legal, but he is not working legal because the members of this commission are corrupted and he not speak with the member of opposition.
Suppose the government does not cancel the elections. Are you likely to continue your protests?
Yeah, we continue. If he is not good to organize the local election, we continue our protest again because the law of our country have a calendar of election. We need to have a local election before.
Some people say that the opposition is doing all this because you are not ready to go for election.
No, that's not right. We are ready to go to election because we need to have a local election now. We don't need to have a presidential election.
Ousmane Diallo is a member of the Executive Committee of the Opposition Union of Democratic Forces Party of Guinea. He was speaking with me from the capital, Conakry. Schools throughout Sierra Leone reopened on Tuesday, more than 8 months after classes were suspended due to the Ebola outbreak. Brahima Toure, Public Relations Officer of the Sierra Leone Ministry of Education, says back to school was a success. He says the government has put in place Ebola prevention measures such as decontamination of schools, distribution of hygiene kits, as well as thermometers to all schools throughout the country.
Well, after so many speculations and so many concerns raised by parents as a result of the fact that we still have Ebola in this country, we were able to put modalities in place to make sure that the school environment is safe. And so when the kids actually came to the school environment, they were amazed and were very much happy to return back to school after being out of school over 9 months.
As you said, it's been so long since the students were in school. They were not in school because of Ebola. So what sort of hygienic measures did your ministry put in place to make sure that the kids do not catch Ebola?
We actually target three components. First, we target the decontamination or disinfection of all schools that were used as holding centers or treatment centers or quarantine centers. We were also able to distribute hygiene kits to all the schools across the country. Veronica buckets, like soap, like hand washing, detergent, all of that. And also we were able to make sure that water is available in all of the schools across the country. And then after that, we also made sure we had enough thermometers. We had about 55,000 thermometers for 9,000 schools that are existing in this country.
Mr. Toure, it's been almost more than, 8 months since the students were last in the classroom. How does your ministry hope to compensate for the loss of time in the classroom?
Well, when we had Ebola outbreak in May last year, as a ministry, we did not just sit there and decide to wait until Ebola is eradicated from this land. So what we did, through the support of the government and our development partners, we launched the radio and television teaching program. So we were after teaching effectively, almost like bringing the classroom into the radio station and the television station. And so that compensated for the lost time. And so for now, post-Ebola, what we have done is we have actually compressed the school year. So we are running a 25-week term for now. And so what does that mean? It means all other extracurricular activities like sports, like Thanksgiving celebrations, like prize giving, and all of the other activities that usually eat up on the time, on the academic year, we have put all of those aside and say it's all going to be structured school, tuition, continuously throughout the remainder of the school year.
Our correspondent in Freetown reported this week that the government of Sierra Leone has barred pregnant girls from attending school. Is that true?
Well, yes. It came about as a result of a concern that was raised by the West African Examination Council, which was the examining body that usually conducts our public examinations here in this country. They wrote a letter as far back as 2010 to the Ministry of Education expressing serious concern about pregnant girls actually taking the examinations and failing. The minister at that time took this complaint to the Sierra Leone cabinet. And so there was a cabinet conclusion at the time that don't allow them in the classroom because it would demotivate those who are already there and are not pregnant.
Brahima Touré is public relations officer of the Sierra Leone Ministry of Education. He was speaking with me from the capital, Freetown. Today's Wednesday, April 15th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington, and please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time, 17 minutes past the hour. Human Rights Watch has condemned what it says is widespread lawlessness and banditry in northern Mali. According to a report released Tuesday, wide swaths of land in the region are devoured of state authority. This has allowed both Islamist groups and individual criminals to commit abuses with impunity. Corinne Dufka, the group's associate director for West Africa, tells Breaking Shriak, her organization is asking the government of Mali in the north to work with a United Nations forces in the country to better protect civilians.
The situation is really very precarious. And the research that we did looked at both the north, where lawless and banditry is rife and is really imperiling the lives of ordinary citizens there, as well as in central Mali, where since the beginning of the year, a new front seems to have opened up with an armed Islamist group comprised primarily of Pol or Fulani has been engaged in numerous attacks and been accompanied by violations against civilians as well as some abuses by the security forces.
Is this a case of banditry and just stealing to steal, or your report mentions a specific group that has Islamist goals?
Yes, we found that the banditry and abuses in the north are being committed by numerous different armed groups as well as individual bandits who may or may not be linked to the armed groups. We spoke with scores of traders and animal herders and merchants who describe an incredibly difficult situation where as soon as they leave Gao or other cities, they are hit time and time again by bandits who steal their goods.
Did you find that people were being targeted because of their ethnicity? You know, was it specifically Tuaregs being targeted, for instance, or was this just people being targeted for their goods?
Well, it's hard to say because the vast majority of merchants in those areas appear to be from the Songhai ethnic group, and then most of the herders that I spoke with were Pol or Bella. But people from all different ethnic groups are really being targeted by this.
Have there been any instances of abuse of power by the army themselves and security forces?
So, yes, we also documented a number of worrying incidents, including mistreatment and torture by the Malian security forces, notably against Pol or Fulani, who are alleged to be involved in supporting this new group in central Mali. I spoke with about 30 individuals who described some form of mistreatment, and about 18 of them who had been detained around Nampala had described quite serious mistreatment, including beating and being forced to drink urine, as well as being threatened with death.
Corinne Dufkat is the West Africa Associate Director for Human Rights Watch. She was speaking to Ricky Schreier from Washington. The United Nations Refugee Agency says Kenya's plan to forcibly repatriate hundreds of thousands of Somalis from the Dadaab refugee camp would violate international law. The UNHCR is urging the Kenyan government to reconsider its decision to close Dadaab, the world's largest refugee complex, within the next 3 months. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from UNHCR headquarters in Geneva.
The government of Kenya announced its decision to close the Dadaab complex a few days ago, following the horrific attack by Somali militant group Al-Shabaab at Kenya's Garissa University College. The UN Refugee Agency says it is shocked and appalled by the attack, which killed 148 students, and understands the seriousness of the threats Kenya is facing. At the same time, the spokeswoman for the agency, Karen de Gruul, says Kenya has an obligation to ensure the security not only of its citizens, but also of other people living in the country, including refugees.
UNHCR is nevertheless concerned that abruptly closing the Dadaab refugee camps and forcing them back to Somalia would have extreme humanitarian and practical consequences, and it would be in breach of Kenya's international obligations. We are thus urging the Kenyan authorities to give the matter further consideration.
Dadaab is a sprawling complex composed of five camps in northeastern Kenya. It houses an estimated 350,000 refugees, mostly Somali women and children. Most of the refugees have been living there for years. Many have been born in the camp and have never been to Somalia. In December, the UNHCR participated in a pilot project to help Somalis voluntarily repatriate to one of three relatively safe areas of Somalia. De Gruul says the UNHCR is ready to help those who wish to return home voluntarily. She adds most of the country is too dangerous for large-scale returns to take place, particularly to south-central Somalia. She tells VOA it would be tough to force so many people to go back at this time.
It's also very difficult to imagine how such a thing could be organized in a way that it maintains the dignity and the safety of the refugees there. I think the main issue is the voluntariness of returns. As you mentioned, if these people were forced to return, it could be in breach of international law, and UNHCR would not facilitate such a move.
The Kenyan government has called this sprawling complex a nursery for Al-Shabaab. De Gruul says the UNHCR recognizes Kenya's security concerns and has been working with the authorities to step up law enforcement in the camp and surrounding areas to deter any terrorist incursions from across the border. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The Somali militant group Al-Shabaab has claimed responsibility for Tuesday bombing and assault on a government complex in the capital, Mogadishu. Security Ministry spokesman Mohamed Yusuf tells VOA Somali Service that 18 people were killed and at least 15 others wounded in the attack on the country's higher education ministry. A witness said militants set off a car bomb outside the ministry walls, allowing the attackers to storm the building and open fire. Among the first rescue teams to reach the scene was Dr. Abdul Kader Abdurrahman Aden, founder of the Mogadishu Ambulance Services.
Approximately it was 12:10 p.m. and we had a big explosion. Then someone called us and told us that there is an explosion in the Ministry of Education. We went there because we were already alert. So when we reached there, we have seen a lot of people dying and injuring in front of the ministry.
And what happened to the people exactly?
I think it was because of the explosion, people died. And after the explosion, there was a gunfire between the fighters.
So in total, how many bodies did you collect and how many people were injured?
15 people died and 20 others was injured. Some people was injured so badly, and I think some people might have died after they reached the hospital because they were so serious.
How did they sustain the injuries? Were these from explosion or gunshot wounds?
Both, but most of the people died because of the explosion.
How did the situation end in the ministry?
It was really very bad situation because most of the people, those who are in the ministry, it was so much disappointed, and even they cannot tell you. If you ask them their name, even they could not remember till hours.
So they were in a state of shock.
Yeah, they were in shock.
Dr. Abdul Kader Abdi Rahman Aden, founder of the Mogadishu Ambulance Services. He was speaking with Haroon Maruf of VOA Somali Service. Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Wednesday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with football. Nigeria overpowered hosts Seychelles 10-1 at the start of the Africa Beach Soccer Championships in Roche Kaiman on Tuesday. In the other Group A encounter, Ivory Coast and Egypt drew 2-2 in open play before Ivory Coast edged the Egyptians 3-1 in the ensuing post-match penalty shootout. In Group B, defending champions Senegal beat Morocco 7-3 as Madagascar outplayed Ghana 9-4. Today, Wednesday, Nigeria tackle Egypt as Seychelles challenge Ivory Coast, while Morocco play Ghana and Madagascar face Senegal. The finalists at this contest qualify for the FIFA Beach Soccer World Cup in Portugal and later this year. Turning to athletics, Athletics Kenya has suspended for 6 months the services of two prominent athletes' agents, Rosa Associati and Valare Sports. Athletics Kenya president Isaiah Kiplagat told the Nairobi media on Tuesday that this is to enable them investigate any potential role the managers of these two entities may have had in failed doping tests that have ravaged Kenya's athletics image in recent months. Rosa Associati manages Rita Jepto, who is serving a 2-year ban for failing a dope test. The company also manages Kenya's world women's 800-meter champion Eunice Sum and world men's 1500-meter champion Asbel Kiprop, among other prominent Kenyan athletes, while Volare Sports manages current world marathon record holder Dennis Kimeto, two-time New York City marathon champion Geoffrey Mutai, and former world marathon record holder Wilson Kipsang, among others. Kipsang is an outspoken critic of Athletics Kenya president Isaiah Kiplagat. On a more cheerful note, 16-year-old new find Kyle Appel won the South Africa Youth 200 meters in 20.76 seconds. Now Appel plans to compete against the country's top senior sprinters this coming weekend.
Going to senior AC as well. That's with the big boys, so I'm just going to go there also and give my best. My aim is this year for African Games. I would like to win it. And after that, if I can, will, I'll do my best and go to Worlds and hopefully grab a medal right there.
That was Kyle Appel, the South Africa Youth 200-meter champion, speaking in Mangaung, Free State Province, South Africa. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Somali militant group Al-Shabaab has claimed responsibility for Tuesday's bombing and assault of a government complex in the capital, Mogadishu. In Guinea, at least one person was killed and several others wounded in the capital, Conakry, as police battled to control violent demonstrations against the government of President Alpha Condé. That's it for this Wednesday, April 15th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Mark Oman, along with our engineer Zara Abuzay, I'm James Butt in Washington, hoping that all of you in Africa will have a very good day.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa, combating terrorism across the continent. From the Al-Shabaab militant massacre of nearly 100 university students in Kenya to the kidnapping of 600 schoolgirls by Boko Haram. Is Africa's war on terrorism winnable? That's next time, right here on VOA Africa.
Celebrate the sounds of Africa today, yesterday, and tomorrow. That's our mission in your show, Music Time in Africa. Hello, I'm your host, Heather Maxwell. Join me every Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC and discover the best Pan-African music in the world. We play it all right here. Only the best on VOA Africa.